Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off this week. And new this morning, Labor Secretary Alex Acosta is stepping down in the mounting furor over the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. Now, calls for Acosta's resignation intensified this week over his handling of the Epstein case some 10 years ago when he was a U.S. attorney here in Florida. Epstein is a convicted sex offender. He was accused of sexually assaulting dozens of underage girls at his estate in Palm Beach. The billionaire financier was sentenced to serve time behind bars and register as a sex offender. But in a highly controversial plea deal, he only served 13 months and spent the night in jail, but could leave during the day and work from his office 6 days a week. And that plea deal avoided a federal trial where Epstein could have faced a much more severe sentence. During a news conference earlier this week, the embattled Acosta said the deal wasn't perfect, but he blamed the lenient sentence for Epstein on the state system.
When we proceeded, the expectation was that it would be an 18-month sentence, and the expectation was that it would be served in jail. And so this work release was complete BS. And I've been on record as far back as 2011 saying that it was not what was bargained for, and it was not what we expected. But this was a state court plea, and because it was a state court plea, the terms of confinement were under the jurisdiction of the state of Florida. And so the outrage over that 13-month, you know, getting to leave jail is entirely appropriate.
Meanwhile, former Palm Beach County State Attorney Barry Krischer released a statement after Acosta's news conference accusing him of rewriting the history of Epstein's plea deal here in Florida. So we're going to begin the hour here on the Florida Roundup with a closer look at the Epstein case and how it began right here in this state as we welcome former Assistant U.S. Attorney David Weinstein and Casey Frank of the Miami Herald and your calls and tweets. Call us statewide wherever you are at 305-995-1800. What are your thoughts about the Epstein case? Tweet us at Florida Roundup. All right, Casey Frank, let's begin with you. Your colleague, Julie Brown, at the Miami Herald is on a well-deserved break this week after leading on this story for years, never letting it go. Her investigative reporting, in fact, is being credited with keeping this case alive and helping authorities eventually nab Epstein. Tell us a little bit about the Herald's commitment to this story.
Well, the Herald's commitment to this story began 2 years ago, right after Julie finished an investigation into Lowell Prison in Central Florida, which is the largest women's prison in the United States. And it came to her attention that many of the women that she talked to had been trafficked. She got very interested in the subject of sexual trafficking, and that led her to the case of Mr. Epstein, and that subsequently led her to the actions of Mr. Acosta when he was the U.S. attorney for Southern Florida. The Herald's commitment to this has been devoting her attention to this subject for the last 18 months. It has involved extensive legal fees. It's involved traveling all over the country, and it has involved staying ahead, even as other news media around the country have kind of joined in the reporting dogpile, and we're proud of what happened this week. We were not trying to collect scalps. We were trying to shine light on something that we thought was highly questionable, and it seems like the events of this week, and especially this past Saturday, vindicate that coverage.
Yes, absolutely. And kudos to you, Julie, and everyone at the Miami Herald for this incredible work. It really shows the importance of a free press and strong newspapers. And certainly with Epstein now being arrested and indicted in New York, the story has mushroomed beyond Florida. But David Weinstein, let's bring it back to Florida. You worked previously as a state attorney in Florida. At the federal level, you worked under Alex Acosta, but not with him on this particular case. What is your reaction to Acosta's resignation earlier today?
Well, Melissa, I think that what he did was the right thing given the circumstances. The focus needs to no longer be on Alex and the decision he made back in the early 2000s with regard to Epstein. The focus needs to be on Epstein, the charges that were filed in New York, and the efforts that are being made to assure that the victims that he has affected across the country receive the attention and that he receives the punishment for the crimes he is alleged to have committed.
Right. And keeping the focus on the victims is so important. Their voices are finally being heard. After, for years, it appeared as though this case might not ever come to anything. And the pressure on Acosta became unsustainable because of that. You know, he tried to defend his decisions around giving Epstein this light sentence. He said it would be better than having him walk free. Others who were involved at the time call that reasoning not credible, David. They point to a 53-page indictment that laid out Epstein's alleged crimes, alleged sexual abuse of dozens of girls, trafficking them, recruiting girls to bring in other girls. Court documents show that Acosta's office, meanwhile, was amenable to the demands of the Epstein defense team and that they even kept Epstein's alleged victims in the dark. So why do you think Acosta went so easy on Epstein?
Well, I think we have to look at the deal as it existed on paper at the time and then draw your conclusions and your determinations from there. So on paper, the deal as written in the non-prosecution agreement required an 18-month sentence followed by 12 months of community control and registration as a sex offender. That was in the mind of the U.S. attorney, who was the one who was responsible for ultimately making the decision and who defended that decision this week. Traded off whether or not these victims were going to become public and whether or not they were going to have to testify. The defense team was certainly becoming very intrusive into their lives and the people who were involved in the matter. And in addition, there were conditions that were imposed regarding restitution to those people. So when you look at it on paper, it seemed like a deal that was going to benefit both sides. And then when you step away from the paper and you look at the time he actually served, yes, it's very apparent that that was not the deal that actually came to fruition. He spent very little time in jail. Many, including myself, were surprised at that. And the victims weren't given enough advance notice as to what was going on. And as Judge Mara has held recently, their rights were violated. So now we need to get the focus back on the victims and make sure that their voices are heard.
Casey Frank, yes, this is a man who is a financier with virtually unlimited financial resources, although even that is now being questioned and scrutinized. Justice delayed is justice denied, as we often hear. And so was this a case of someone rich and powerful with high-level connections being able to essentially get a slap on the wrist from the criminal justice system? The case is being made by underage sexual assault victims, not, it appears, just being taken seriously by the criminal justice system, as critics have alleged.
Well, it's pretty clear from our reporting that Mr. Epstein was able to hire an O.J. Simpson type legal team. And our reporting showed that emails passed back and forth between that team and Mr. Acosta's office showed that the Epstein lawyers continued to make demands over and over, really, for not only a mitigation of any sort of punishment, but also demands that the case be kept secret from the victims in the case. And I think that's where he's facing the greatest amount of second guessing, which is the attorneys for Mr. Epstein demanded that these young witnesses not be told the status of the case. And Mr. Weinstein said they didn't get enough advance notice of what was going on. My understanding is they got zero advance notice about what was going on. And in fact, the case, the the agreement was sealed afterward, and it had to be opened up by a lawyer who was hired by some of those victims to do exactly that.
And we're getting your calls now flowing into the Florida Roundup from around the state as we look at the resignation of Labor Secretary Alex Acosta. Acosta stepped down this morning after a mounting furor over the case of billionaire and convicted sexual assaulter Jeffrey Epstein. What are your questions, thoughts, comments? It's 305-995-1800. We'll go to your tweets in a moment at Florida Roundup. Lisa is in St. Augustine. She's on the line. Hi, Lisa. How are you? Go ahead.
Yes, I've been following the case over the last several years, and one of the things that really stood out at me, to me at Acosta's presser was the fact that he continued to continually use the word predator, even after having claimed erroneously that his concern was to make sure that Epstein had to register as an offender and that that accountability was important to him. I thought that just underscored how supercilious and nefarious and just straight up erroneous his whole presser was. But I have not seen anybody address the fact that he kept using the word predator instead of offender. And I think that's a significant, that was very significant to me.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you for that, David Weinstein. The evidence shows that Jeffrey Epstein is a sexual predator. What about Lisa's comment there?
Well, I think that often when people are talking about cases in the criminal justice system, the people on the inside use one word that they believe is interchangeable with the other. He is, from the accounts that both he pled guilty to and the allegations that were made and what he's registered as, he is both an offender and a predator. I mean, quite frankly, doesn't make any difference on paper what it is he's categorized as. He is a sexual offender, and that encompasses those who are predators. He's as dangerous whether he's labeled one or the other.
And let me ask you as a follow-up, David, another comment that was attributed in the last week or so to the now ex-Labor Secretary Alex Acosta. Acosta allegedly told the Trump transition team when he was being vetted for a cabinet post that Epstein, in his words, belonged to the IC, the intelligence community, and that the whole thing was above his pay grade. And that was the rationale he gave the Trump folks who were vetting him to be labor secretary for giving Epstein a light sentence. David, what are we to make of this?
Well, that question was asked of him at the press conference earlier this week. And in the public comments, he denied that there was any truth given to that statement.
It was a non-denial, though, wasn't it?
That's correct. And certainly given people who are involved with those type of individuals, whether he is or he isn't, it wasn't something that someone was going to admit to in public. And quite frankly, it shouldn't come into the equation. There have been occasions in my prior careers where I've had to work with people who have become cooperating sources. And the baggage that they have comes with them. And if they deserve to be punished for their conduct, despite having valuable information, they deserve to be punished for their conduct. So it certainly shouldn't be something that was overriding and considered in terms of what punishment he should have received.
Marlene is in Lauderdale Lakes. Hey, Marlene, thanks for calling the show. Go ahead. Go ahead, Marlene. You're on the air. Sure.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Marlene.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, Marlene, go ahead. You're on the air. Okay, she seems to be having a little trouble, but the question she had was, where were the parents of these teenage girls who were victimized, raped, sexually assaulted, molested by Jeffrey Epstein? Casey, the Miami Herald got into this and explained how Epstein preyed on vulnerable and troubled kids, children. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, he sent recruiters to malls, to house parties on the other side of the river, I guess you'd say, in Palm Beach County. And he recruited young women who came from troubled backgrounds, who we talked to one who said, my mother was strung out on drugs. She wasn't paying any attention to me. It would appear that he was recruiting victims, you know, who would be less credible than say, maybe some others. And of course, you know, after he was charged, his legal team hired hired private investigators who dug deeply into the background of those young victims and culled through their social media accounts to look for anything that could be used to undercut their testimony. So much so that, yes, I think it was true that that it would have been difficult to put some of these young women on the stand, although there were 36 of them at the time, and perhaps some of them would have been quite credible witnesses. If I could just chime in briefly on the predator question, it's clear from the emails from our reporting by Julie Brown that it was very important to Mr. Epstein that he not be categorized as a predator, but rather as an offender, which, as I understand it, is a very different category under the law in the state of Florida. And a few years back, Mr. Epstein gave a quote to the New York Post saying to the effect, "I am not a sexual predator, I am a sexual offender." Mm. That it's the difference between murdering somebody and stealing a bagel.
So he was very concerned with the legal, the semantics, the different legal definitions. That's
interesting. That is my understanding.
Mr. Weinstein, you know, there have been other prominent cabinet-level departures during the Trump administration. Is this one different? President Trump had a personal friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. So did former President Clinton. Even Prince Andrew flew on Jeffrey Epstein's plane. There may be more shoes to drop as this investigation goes forward. What about that?
Well, the position that former Labor Secretary Acosta had was in no way connected to what this investigation might be. So he wasn't going to have any input in any decision-making process that took place there. And his resignation now removes the focus from him and puts it back on Epstein and puts it back on the victims. In terms of the other allegations that have been made regarding other individuals who are involved, that's something that clearly the Southern District of New York is going to be looking at, that the Department of Justice is going to be looking at. And I would hope, as a former federal prosecutor, that the people who are currently federal prosecutors, either at Main Justice or in the Southern District of New York, are going to turn over every rock that's involved in this, get down into the information, and determine whether or not there's any truth or veracity as to any of those statements. And I would hope that they would be able to do that without having to rely on information that Epstein would have to provide to them.
Right, because other reporting going over and above the actual charges Epstein faces is the source of his money is murky, too. There's a lot of mystery surrounding how he became so wealthy. That's still to be looked at, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly something that they're going to be looking at as the case progresses. It's going to be called into question at his upcoming detention and bond hearing on Monday because he's asking to put up some assets as collateral. There's also a forfeiture provision that's contained in the indictment. They're seeking to seize and forfeit the mansion in New York where this illegal activity has taken place. So his assets and how he obtained his assets is going to come under focus both in that hearing on Monday and then as the case develops, as they try and find reparations for the victims who were involved in this case.
That's right, and much more still to come. We'll continue to follow it and take a few more of your calls and tweets here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is off today. And this hour, we're continuing our look at Labor Secretary Alex Acosta's resignation just this morning amid the fallout here in Florida and in New York from the Jeffrey Epstein case. One Florida lawmaker with a very personal perspective on all this is State Senator Lauren Book. The Broward County Democrat is a leading advocate for fighting child sex trafficking, as she is herself a survivor of child sex abuse. I spoke with Book on Thursday before Acosta announced he was stepping down. Let's listen. Senator Lauren Boock, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You said no amount of money or power can keep what is done in the darkness from coming to light. Your reaction to the arrest and indictment of Jeffrey Epstein was powerful and personal. Can you share your thoughts with our listeners about the latest developments in this case?
I am just so glad that he is finally being brought to justice. He exploited, enslaved, and assaulted these young women and was able to do so in the darkness for so long because the justice the imbalance of justice was perverted by so many. I am just so glad that justice is finally being served. This monster is a serial sex trafficker and sex predator who enslaved and hurt countless untold women who had no voice. He was able to continue to do this by people that we would hope would uphold truth and justice, and they did not. And to me, they were nothing more than accomplices in these terrible acts. And I'm just so glad that we're in a place today because of the incredible work of Julie Brown, that we're going to make sure that these untold women have their day and justice will be served.
And yes, certainly incredible reporting by Julie Brown at the Miami Herald, as we've been talking about. And let me ask you as a follow-up. A judge has found that prosecutors that acted under former U.S. Attorney, now Labor Secretary Alex Acosta, broke the law in their handling of the case. Alex Acosta did not apologize earlier this week when he gave a news conference about the Epstein case. Do you think he should step down, resign over his handling of this case?
You know, I do. And it was deflection, 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 and more of a blame game. The former U.S. attorney if you just watched that piece of what this is, you would have thought that, you know, he did maybe what he was supposed to do. But we know he did not. He had a 53-page federal indictment. Epstein could have gone to prison for the rest of his life, but Acosta and others continued to allow him to exist in the darkness and harm untold more young women. Let's think about this. Epstein served 13 months in county jail and was able to go to his office, continue to make money, have a life during the day. The penalty in Florida for cockfighting is more than what Jeffrey Epstein served for harming untold countless women, some of whom we may never know, some of whom have lost their lives, taken their lives. And Acosta is a part of that, and he should be held accountable, and others too. I said it earlier. But they are nothing more to me than accomplices who allowed Jeffrey Epstein to do the things that he did. Whether they were the women who worked for him or the pilots who ushered these young girls and women in and out, to Acosta himself, to the judicial system, everyone failed these girls. And it's time that there be some accountability all the way around.
And Senator Boock, of course, this is personal for you. You started the nonprofit Lawrence Kids in your own name to help other victims of childhood sexual abuse based on your own personal history as a child. You backed a bill in Tallahassee addressing sex trafficking in Florida, signed into the law by the governor last month. Florida is a hotbed of human and sex trafficking. And so even going beyond the Epstein horrors in that case, Florida still has a long way to go in addressing this issue, as a state, don't we?
Yes, we do. I've been working for over a decade now in my advocacy because of the things that I had to endure as a young woman. And know these horrors, know the things that these young women had to endure, that they were given a life sentence by Jeffrey Epstein, handed down, that they could never escape. I know what that is. I live today with the terrors, and so I understand that. But we do have a long way to go. Some of the things we've been working on and you know, could have prevented some of these things from happening. You know, now we'll have a human trafficking registry, which is diversion. We're going to have training so that people can spot the signs. But more than that, you know, one of the constitutional amendments that passed last year, Marcy's Law, would allow and give victims a right to be heard. One of the things that when we started talking with Julie Brown, we worked on and passed last legislative session, that if you're a registered sex offender, you must check in within 3 days. You know, in this case, Jeffrey Epstein was flying to Palm Beach from his full-time residence in the Caribbean and was able to operate under the radar in Florida. That won't be possible now. That was House Bill 1301, which passed in 2018. So we are continuing to crack light. And what and really thank you for covering this case, and thank you for ensuring that people are paying attention. Because when we do that, we raise awareness. We know that 95% of sexual abuse is preventable. And when we are talking about these things, predators and serial sex traffickers aren't able to thrive. And so I just, you know, want to continue to do that good work and continue to try to seek justice for these survivors and countless others.
Your voice on this issue is so powerful. So thank you so much for appearing here on the Florida Roundup with us and sharing your thoughts. Senator Lauren Book, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
That conversation was yesterday. This morning, Book issued a new statement saying the resignation of Alex Acosta is a victory for crime victims everywhere. And we're continuing to take your calls and tweets here on the Florida Roundup about the latest developments in the Jeffrey Epstein case, the initial plea deal in Florida, Alex Acosta, the labor secretary's resignation just this morning, with Casey Frank of the Miami Herald and former assistant U.S. Attorney David Weinstein with us, and lots of calls from all over Florida. Let's go to Jeffrey in Tallahassee. He's been holding. Jeffrey, happy Friday to you. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. You know, contrary to what people believe, in America we do have a king, and it's called the law. And I think that the last comments of the young lady were a good segue into my comments, is that I wish there was more accountability to know who the lawyers were that represented Mr. Epstein in Florida. I'm sure that they are, quote, outstanding citizens in the community, and their young daughters and young sons are attending Harvard and Yale. We don't ever hear about them. But let's just say, when people corrupt the system, especially our legal system, it is a very dangerous situation for the country. And I think sometimes journalists do a little better job in unveiling not just the federal people and the government people involved, but these legal people who are using for financial means the legal system to build their own personal lives. Thank you so much.
All right, Jeffrey. Well, you know, under our system, anyone who's accused has the right to legal counsel. That said, David Weinstein, there's so much anger about this and a strong perception that the system is corrupt, that if you're powerful, connected enough, you can get away with just about anything. Here's a tweet to the Florida Roundup from Sean. I can't wait to see how you're going to normalize this, probably by using the few bad apples defense rather than acknowledging the corruption of our system of government. And so, as someone who worked within the system at the state and federal levels, how do you respond to those who are just so outraged about this and feel that the system failed these young women and girls?
I'm not going to try to rationalize the defense that people are entitled to, and I'm certainly not going to do what the caller or the person who just tweeted has asked us to do. I think that it is a system that we have used for well over 200 years, and that there are advocates on both sides of the system. In the state of Florida, we have a very powerful Florida Constitution that allows victims to speak up and hear their voices heard, and it is a right for them to come forward and to have their voices heard. On the other side, people are both defended by individuals and the cases are prosecuted by those individuals. And everybody has to work within the system. It's a system that's not perfect. And in most circumstances, it's a system that works. And when it doesn't work, we need to step back. We need to see what the problem was, and we need to do something to correct it. It's not perfect, but for the most part, it's one that works. And when there are injustices, whether it's on the prosecution side, the defense side, or for the victim, we right those injustices, and we make sure that it's one where we can still participate in it and that both sides receive equal representation.
One more call. Let's go to Barbara in Tampa. Hi, Barbara. You're on the Florida Roundup.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Yeah, we sure can. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call. This is a fascinating topic, and I'm so glad he did resign. I think it was the right thing to do. I was thrilled when I heard it. But I had a question regarding defense attorneys kind of in general. I guess what troubles me sometimes is that I do agree we absolutely have the right in this country to have a legal defense. But it seems to me that there's far too often when these defense attorneys, they either use intimidation for the victims or they encourage literally breaking of the law, like ignoring subpoenas and things of that nature. And I wonder why defense attorneys kind of are almost allowed to get away with this and why there isn't repercussions, perhaps getting them disbarred. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you for that, Casey Frank. Also, I'm getting emails from listeners saying, please make sure you don't refer to Epstein's victims as young women. They were girls, not women. Thank you for that from listeners.
Of course.
Casey, let's close with you. If you could respond to her comments from Tampa. And also, let's also keep front and center the victims and also the work of reporters that brought this case to light.
Well, actually, what I wanted to say about the right to a strong defense, that certainly is a right that's there under our Constitution. And Mr. Weinstein said that there is also a right for victims to speak. And in this case, they were not allowed to speak. They were deprived of a voice. And I think what Julie K. Brown and Emily Michaud did was give those victims a voice. And that has made a difference as we've seen this past week.
It really has, David Weinstein. I can't say enough good things about the Miami Herald and the work of Julie Brown. And the authorities in New York, the Southern District of New York, credited the investigative reporting with helping this case go as far as it has, right?
Absolutely. You know, this is something that deserved to be brought to everyone's attention. I also commend Julie and the Miami Herald and all the reporters for the work that they have done. You know, victims have a need and have a voice. They are often victimized again when they come back through the system. And without support of either their own lawyers or their family and support group, they often do fade back into the background, and that is very often what defense attorneys hope will happen. The Herald and the press have brought focus back on to the victims, and again, we need to keep them in the forefront of this. It needs not to be a side issue about anything else, but for them finally getting a chance for their voices to be heard and for the wrongs that were committed against them to be addressed.
And Casey Frank, the Herald and others have interviewed, many of them are now adult women, but were girls at the time, children, that at the time they were victimized and assaulted. Yes. And raped by Jeffrey Epstein. As you talk to these kids, they are still kids, some of them. It's important that their voices not be lost, since we couldn't interview them for this program. But certainly they've expressed happiness that at long last Epstein is being brought to justice, right?
That's correct. And they are also coming forward in greater numbers. We had a story today that said as many as a dozen new alleged victims have reached out to some of the lawyers who are involved in this case. Of course, the FBI has set up a call-in number for victims to reach out, and we don't know who and how many people might have called that number, but I think we're going to find that that more victims are going to raise their hands, to ensure that justice is done in this case going forward.
And you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Jack is on the line in St. Pete. Hey, Jack, thanks for calling. Go ahead. Hi, Jack, you're on the air.
I'm glad that you're using the word children. I hear a lot of news reporters calling them young women, young underage women. I think we need to put this in perspective, is that they're not young women, they're children. And as a survivor of sexual abuse from as being a child, I think we just need to put that in perspective. They're not old enough to make that kind of informed decision.
Thanks. I'm sorry to hear that, Jack, and thank you so much for pointing that out. David Weinstein, inherently, a minor cannot consent. A minor is not of age. They cannot consent to sexual activity with an adult. By definition, it's assault. It's molestation. It's rape.
Well, that's why the statutes that we have are in place, both within the state of Florida as well as outside the state of Florida. That's why there's no statute of limitations for the human trafficking crimes that Epstein's been charged with in New York. That's why, under certain circumstances, given the age of the child victim, there's no statute of limitations for those cases down here. The lawmakers are trying to do what they can to protect these young children and make sure that they're not preyed upon by adults. Unfortunately, there are individuals who will prey upon just these types of individuals who have a bad family background, who are not people who have parents who care about them, and who can be preyed upon in just these types of situations. And it's important that both the law enforcement and the criminal justice system have a method of making sure that the people who prey on these young children are held accountable for it.
Thank you both so much, gentlemen, for sharing your thoughts on this story, a Florida story and a national story. Former Assistant U.S. Attorney David Weinstein and Casey Frank of the Miami Herald. Incredible work by the Herald on this. Support the Herald and whatever newspaper is in your community. Casey, David, thanks so much for being on the Florida Roundup. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
A quick break, and in a moment, there is yet another challenge moving through the courts to the Affordable Care Act. What does that mean for Obamacare enrollees here in Florida? We'll take a look next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off this week. Well, the Affordable Care Act is being challenged in the courts yet again. This week, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans heard oral arguments in a case brought by 18 state attorneys general. That includes Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody. Now, this marks the latest legal challenge, after dozens of them have been brought in the past, to the ACA or Obamacare. And did you know that Florida has the most people of any state in the country who get their insurance through the Affordable Care Act? Nearly 2 million people out there. With more on the legal challenge to the ACA, we welcome Julio Ochoa. He's the editor of Health News Florida, and he's with us from WUSF in Tampa. Julio, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And if you have questions about your health care coverage, the Affordable Care Act, give us a call, 305-995-1800. Tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Julio, tell us about this latest legal challenge to the ACA. What is the state's argument? And by the way, Florida is part of the argument being made to overturn the Affordable Care Act. What's the argument?
That's right. Florida is one of 18 states that are arguing that the courts should find that the law is unconstitutional because the mandate that forces everyone to buy insurance no longer has a penalty. So to understand it, you kind of have to step back a little bit. When the law was challenged in 2012, the Supreme Court ruled that it was constitutional because Congress has the ability to tax citizens. And in this case, the penalty for not purchasing health insurance, the Supreme Court considered that a tax. So fast forward to 2017 and the tax bill that was passed by Congress, which zeroed out the penalty. Now states are arguing since there's no penalty or tax, the law should be considered unconstitutional, because it's basically forcing U.S. citizens to buy a product.
I see. And there are a couple of judges that have indicated receptivity to this argument. Can we read the tea leaves? How likely is this appeals court to overturn the Affordable Care Act, and presumably then it would go back to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if you just listen to the questions that they asked of the supporters of the Affordable Care Act, it might sound like two of the three judges are conservative. So it might sound like that they agreed that it should be overturned. So it looks like it may be heading back to the Supreme Court.
And should the Affordable Care Act be overturned, where will that leave the nearly 2 million people here in Florida who signed up for health insurance under the federal exchange at healthcare.gov? Of course, Florida was one of the states that decided not to set up its own state exchange, but still, Florida has the most enrollees of any state in the country. We're talking about a lot of people who get their insurance this way, Julio. Where will they go if this option is no longer there?
They'll be pushed out into the private market, right? But mm-hmm. what's really harmful to them is they won't be able to afford subsidies. They won't. The government gives them subsidies to help them afford insurance, and they'll no longer be eligible for those. But it's not just the 1.7 million people who signed up. This law, if it goes away and if the entirety is struck down, we're talking about many more millions of people who have pre-existing conditions. By one estimate, there's almost 8 million people in Florida with pre-existing conditions. We're also talking about over 100,000 young people who are on their parents' insurance. And the law allows them to be on their parents' insurance until they're 26. That part of the law would go away, too. It'll affect old people as well. There's the age tax that you may have heard of before the ACA was in place. Those folks, what the ACA did was limited the amount older people could be charged to three times more than younger people. So older people who are not yet eligible for Medicare could only be charged three times more than younger people. Well, that rule would go away too. So there are 1.78 million people who have health insurance through the Affordable Care Act, but there's millions more who get benefits from this law that would be affected.
So many ripple effects and calls coming into the show, too. People want to share their stories, their personal medical challenges. JR is in West Palm Beach. Hi, JR. Go ahead. What's your situation?
I enrolled in Obamacare, which was originally a demoralizing term that kind of became a term of affection. But when I became full-time at Office Depot, I had to take theirs. I was paying $300 a month as a paycheck, as opposed to the $23.32 for the ACA. And with the insurance that I was getting at Office Depot, I had no psychiatrist coverage, which I desperately needed. I found out that the injections I was getting at the allergist ended up going to $500 a shot. And I was even told by my boss that his wife's diabetes medication wasn't even covered by it. So we made too much to qualify for the ACA after that.
I see. So you're paying a lot more then. Sorry to hear that, JR.
Oh, yeah. Full psychiatrist office visits if I needed to see one, and those can actually cost a lot.
Well, I'm so sorry to hear that, and I know you're not alone. There are many other folks out there struggling with their medical bills and their insurance costs. Thanks for the call, JR. That's JR in West Palm Beach, and this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Julio Ochoa, Health News Florida, that's not a unique story. And so what's interesting about watching this legal challenge is both the Democratic and Republican parties have pledged to at least protect pre-existing conditions, no matter what happens with the Affordable Care Act. That has become a third rail they don't want to touch. But there are lots of other elements to this, as we just heard from that caller. The political ramifications of how this shakes out could be a pretty groundswelling. This could be a big issue in the next election, or maybe the issue, because so many people are affected by this.
That's right. And I mean, what that caller just said alluded to the popularity of this law for people without insurance. And what you saw is you saw that play out when the mandate went away that forced, or the penalty that forced people to buy insurance. When that got zeroed out this year, people still signed up. In Florida, we had more people than ever sign up. And across the country, only about 300,000 fewer people signed up. So clearly, people like their insurance. They need insurance. They need health insurance. So they continued to sign up even without being forced to by facing a penalty.
And you've covered this for years now. How have people rated the quality of their coverage through the federal exchange here in Florida? You know, Florida Blue, I think, offers more policies under the banner of Obamacare than any other insurer. What do you hear from people? Are they happy with their Obamacare coverage? Unhappy? What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, the folks that I've spoken to are happy to have coverage and happy to get subsidies. There's also always the issue of cost of healthcare and what they're getting in return for what they pay. And it depends, I guess, the satisfaction with the law depends on whether how much subsidies you get, like whether you're getting you're getting subsidies because you don't make enough money. But those who make a lot of money or middle class people are not as happy with this law because they're not getting any subsidies and they're having to pay a lot for insurance, and their costs continue to go up. So Obamacare is not really helping them at all.
All of that said, the stakes of this lawsuit are significant. If the ACA were to be ruled unconstitutional, it bears close watching. When might we hear something, Julio?
That's a good question. I think it will be at least a couple months before the judges rule, and then there will be, you know, they'll immediately try to appeal that, and it could be going to the Supreme Court.
Remarkable to think about the Supreme Court taking this up yet again.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, they've ruled on it twice already, so this would be the third time. And it will be interesting. The composition of the Supreme Court has changed, so we could have a different ruling, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. In the meantime, people are still signing up. There's, in fact, a big network of people around the state of Florida, isn't there, Julio, that's on the ground helping people sign up for health coverage at healthcare.gov. That's still ongoing, even though funding has been cut significantly.
That's right. They did significantly cut funding for the navigators, they call them, people who help people sign up. And, you know, despite that, you know, Florida saw record enrollment. One of the things that helped is we started to see premiums level off for Obamacare and actually decrease for the first time this year in Florida. And, you know, it was only by like 1.5%, but that just hadn't happened in the past. There had been double-digit increases, and even a single-digit increase was something that was considered good. But now we're actually seeing them level off and decrease in some areas. So that speaks to the fact that insurers are in the market. There's more in the market, so there's more competition. So you're starting to see some benefits of the law after 9 years or so. You know, despite the efforts by this administration to cut some of that.
And we appreciate your insights, Julio Ochoa. He's the editor of Health News Florida with us from WUSF. Thanks for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And that's our show, The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are producers. Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, Technical Director. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz, and our theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us this Friday. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next Friday.